ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 8 टेक्स्ट 37 Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. In this verse, Dhruva Maharaj is stating to Narad Muni what he wants. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. I don't want wealth, followers, or beautiful women. But Dhruva Maharaj wanted a very greatest material position, which means that he wanted wealth, and to be the king, as he wanted to be, also means he would have followers and women. So it wasn't a very good request. As Srila Prabhupada sometimes used to say, one should not go to a sadhu for that which is available in the market. Generally people go to sadhus for some blessing for material gain. And so-called sadhus who bless in such a way are highly regarded by materialistic people. So actually it's an insult or a waste of time or disturbance to a true sadhu to ask him for such things. A sadhu may acquire power to bless others. We see there are many sadhus, even if they're not devotees, but they have power to bless others because of austerities or yogic activities performed in this life or in previous lives. They have the power to bless others. But then they take pleasure in blessing others, and they take pleasure in the material, the sense of honor and prestige that comes from that. They may be very renounced and austere, but they're enjoying the subtle sense gratification of being a revered saint. So Narad Muni, as a real sadhu, devotee of the Lord, had no interest in giving anyone any material benedictions. Of course, the Supreme Lord or his devotees may want to install their devotees in a high material position. Just like Krishna, he wanted to install Yudhishthira on the throne of the world. But that is not to fulfill the material desires of his devotee, but to give him the opportunity to rule the world in a religious way. But here, Dhruva Maharaj is expressing his material desire, even though he's, later it will be seen that he's a great pure devotee, but at this point, he is expressing a material desire, that he wants to have a position more exalted than that achieved within the three worlds by anyone. Now, at this point, it seems he hasn't thought very deeply about what he's saying or what he's doing. He's simply angry and ruled by his emotions. It's almost childish. He is a child. But we see even many adults act in this childish kind of way, that I will show you, I'm better than you. He wants to show, he's angry at his father and his stepmother. I want to show you that I'm better than you. You've rejected me, you're in a superior position to me, you think you can reject me. But I will show you that I am greater than you. I will make you subordinate to me. So these are all childish desires. Dhruva Maharaj is from Kshatriya stock. Kshatriyas, to a large extent, are governed by the mode of passion, Rajagun. Therefore, in Vedic society, Kshatriyas have to be guided by Brahmins so that their passion can be properly utilized for the benefit of society. But here we see that Dhruva Maharaj is simply angry. He hasn't considered as a Brahmana like Narad might do. A Brahmana will consider, Kim sukam martya dhamina, what happiness is there in this material world? What is the use of being the king of the universe?
Yeah.
Just a headache. Just having to manage everything. Whenever, all the time people saying Maharaj ki jai ho and all this kind of stuff. So from Brahmin's point of view, overlordship of the three worlds is just meaningless. Dhruva Maharaj did not consider who he's asking and why he's asking. He has faith that Narad Muni can fulfill, give, fulfill his desire, or at least can show him the path to fulfill his desire. He didn't consider that if Narad Muni is so powerful, then why didn't he himself become the king of the world? Why he's simply content to wander around playing his vina, chanting Radhika Ramana, Radhika Ramana. So here he's asking, Dhruva Maharaj is asking for a position more exalted than that achieved in the three worlds by anyone. And actually he would get that in two ways, both materially and spiritually. Materially he would be awarded occupancy of the seat, the throne of Dhruva Loka, which isn't very important. It's not intrinsically very important. Intrinsically there's no real difference between the post of Brahma and that of an ant. Abrahma stamba paryantam sarva maya mayam jagat. The whole universe is full of maya, both from Brahma Loka down to the grass. So whether you're in maya as Brahma or whether you're in maya as a blade of grass, you're in maya. So anyway, Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to be in maya as the king of the universe rather than be in maya as a rejected little boy. He thought that the position of a first-class prisoner in this material world is better than that of a last-class prisoner. But actually, he did achieve the most exalted position, really exalted, by the grace of Narad Muni, by the real grace of Narad Muni, which is that he achieved the position of a pure devotee of Krishna. So this is the real benediction of the sadhu. One should be very careful in the presence of sadhus. Sadhus can be very powerful. You see, Narad Muni also cursed this month. We're celebrating the month of Damodar, which is connected with this pastime, comes about beginning with Narad Muni's curse. So sons of Kuvera had to stand as trees for many thousands of years. Now, the grace of a sadhu is that he's always kind. His blessing and curse, they come to the same point eventually. That love of God. But one should be very careful in dealing. Because if one offends a sadhu, that can also be destructive to one's spiritual life. It was actually Narad Muni's great benediction upon Nalakuvara and Manigriva that he cursed them. In this way, he cleared their punishment for standing as trees. It cleared them from the offense of having offended him. Had he not done so, then they would have had to suffer far worse. Because like a king, his duty is to hang or otherwise execute a murderer, which may seem very harsh, but actually it is a kindness upon the criminal because it clears him from the karmic reaction of murder, which he would otherwise have to suffer much more later on. So in the same way, Narad Muni, he cleared the sinful reaction of Nalakuvra and Manigriva and ultimately gave them love of God. Now Dhruva Maharaj, he's asking for a material benediction, and just as Nalakuvra and Manigriva, the end result of their curse was that they got love of God. Also Dhruva Maharaj, the end result of his material benediction is that he will get love of God. But actually material happiness and material suffering are not that much different in quality. That same example, first class prisoner or last class prisoner, you're still a prisoner. It's a suffering condition. So Dhruva Maharaj was to discover that his overlordship of the three worlds is just a waste of time and useless anyway. Of course, that is dovetailed in that was possible to dovetail in the service of the Lord. But when he eventually came to the point of understanding that the real benediction of life is to develop love of God, then he considered his overlordship of the three worlds to be simply a disturbance and a nuisance. And he lamented that he had even desired such a thing, and let alone ask such a thing from such a great saint. And he lamented that his desire had been fulfilled. Because when it was fulfilled, he just wanted to chant Hare Krishna. Then he had to be the Lord of the Three Worlds for some time. The Prabhupada comments in one of these purports, a devotee should be very careful in his desires. Because if he desires something material from the personality of Godhead, he may get it. But having got it, he may simply lament that I should have been aiming for love of God, but instead I got some material position. One should be very careful in how one asks for benedictions. It is proper and natural to ask a sadhu for benedictions, but one should desire in a way that will be for his ultimate benefit. Sanatana Goswami, when he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he left everything in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hands. He told him, Apana hita hit kichui na jani. I don't know what's for my benefit and what isn't.
You know,
so you please instruct me accordingly, what is the best thing? Those who are Sarabritam, those who are, or Saranga, those who are interested in the essence of life, they always want to find out what is the best thing. And they don't assume that they know what the best thing is. But they go to a sadhu and ask, what is the best thing? We see Parikshit Maharaj, at the time of his death, was asking all the rishis and munis present, what is the best thing? What is the highest duty for every human being, and especially for one who is about to die? The sages at Naimisharanya, they asked Sutta Goswami a similar question. What is the topmost religious principle?
Yep.
So this led Sutta Goswami to answer by speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, just as Shukadeva had spoken it to Parikshit.
Well, yeah.
Because the inquiry was basically the same, that what is the best thing? So of course, the what is the best thing that is summarized in the beginning of Bhagavatam. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaitukya pratihataya yatma suprasitati. The topmost religious process is that by which one can develop unalloyed devotional service to the Transcendental Lord. Such devotional service should be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to fully satisfy the self. But Dhruva Maharaj, he wasn't careful enough or humble enough to go through this process. He declared himself in the previous verse, Durvinita, Avinita, Avinita, not submissive, not submissive.
No.
He thought that, you know, here's a sadhu, but anyway, sadhu's telling me what to do. I'll tell the sadhu what to do.
That's...
You want to bless me like this? No, I'll tell you. You bless me like this.
Yep.
That's not the way to approach a guru. That guru, you have to instruct me, so instruct me, but I'll tell you what to instruct me. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. His sannyas guru. The guru must give a mantra to the disciple. So Keshav Bharati, the sannyas guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was from the Mayavad Sampradaya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu superficially was going to take sannyas in the Mayavad Sampradaya. So before taking the mantra from his guru, he asked him that, is this the mantra you're going to give me? And then recited the Vaishnav mantra. In other words, he told him that, you know, he practically, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiated him as a Vaishnava and then got initiation from him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can do that because he's the guru of everybody. But for others than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the proper process is to take instruction from the guru submissively. If one thinks he knows better than the guru, then he'll have to lament. Because practically, it's contradictory and hypocritical to accept a guru and then not to accept his instruction. And even more so, to think that he knows better than the guru and can instruct the guru how to instruct. So Dhruva Maharaj was caught in this network of contradictions by his own material desires. He was basically a good soul, an exalted soul, great devotee. And Narad Muni, he was expert in guiding him in such a way that his real self-interest would be fulfilled. Sometimes an example is given of riding a horse. Horses naturally tends to be high-spirited, so the horse is controlled by the reins. But if the reins are... He's controlled by the reins, but if the reins are held too tight, the horse may protest and refuse to cooperate. But if a little slack is given, a little loose, he's given a little room to manipulate, then he can be directed in the general direction. So like that, a guru may not micromanage every detail of his disciple's life. Now breathe in, now breathe out. That's, of course, a yoga guru might do that. He may give some general direction, and let the disciple develop his intelligence how to apply that. and in this way guide him back to Godhead. Or it may be that he may even give some leeway for the material desires of the devotee, understanding that the disciple is not fully ready to surrender. In the purport to the Sarvatthaman Parityatya verse, Srila Prabhupada refers to the process of surrender. In other words, surrender, is explained in the purport, it's gradually cultivated. Basically, a devotee should have an attitude of surrender. And his surrender, he makes a decision to surrender. But still, on the subtle platform and even on the gross platform, there may be so many elements of non-surrender. It's not that one thinks, well, now I'll surrender to Krishna, and just all of a sudden one becomes a pure devotee. It may be, but generally the process is a gradual process. Sādhā kānam ayaṁ prema pādo bhāve pavet kramaha. Rupa Goswami describes that the development from shraddha, initial faith, to prema is a gradual one, step by step. So, Guru, understanding this, may guide his disciple, being somewhat tolerant of their inability to fully surrender immediately, pushing them to do so, but at the same time being understanding of their, if they have an inability to fully do so, that is characteristic of an expert spiritual master, that they guide their disciple towards perfection and even guide him to overcome major anarthas. Dhruva Maharaj had a major anartha. He wanted to be the king of the universe. It's not a very good qualification for a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said just the opposite. Vaishnava thinks of himself as the servant of everyone. Dhruva Maharaj wanted to establish himself as the master of everyone. But Narad Muni was able to guide him in such a way that both his desires were fulfilled. Materially, he became the master of everyone, but he understood that intrinsically he is the servant of everyone, because he is the servant of Krishna. The servant of Krishna thinks, I'm also the servant of Krishna's devotees. Is there any question about this?
What can cause
Cause? There's no material cause for taking up devotional service. But a disciple, he will surrender. That has to be his own desire. One who is very fortunate, he will do that. Janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. Pure devotional service is not achieved even through many lifetimes of material pious activities. Satra lolyam mulam api ekalam. This described that Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam yadi katopi labhyate. Tatra lolyam abhimulyam ekalam janma koti sukritayana labhyate. Devotional service to Krishna, to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada took this word Krishna consciousness from this verse.
Prabhupada.
If at all one can get it, one should take it. He says that the only price that can be paid for this, it is invaluable. Therefore, the only price that can be paid for it is the strong desire to get it. Now, of course, there are incentives to awaken that desire. Just like, why love Krishna? Why should we love Krishna? There are so many other people we can love. We can love a father, mother, wife, dog, cat, and so on. But why are we recommended to love Krishna? Why is loving Krishna loving better than your dog or cat? Dog is also very affectionate. He licks you. First he licks his genitals, then he licks you. He licks his genitals, he loves you. But there's a difference between God and dog. God means he is Ananta Kalyana Guna Vishishta. He is decorated with inconceivable, unlimited, transcendental qualities. Therefore, he's known as Krishna, which means all attractive. There are various manifestations of reasons for attraction to Krishna. These are technically called Udipan, such as the sound of Krishna's flute, or his beautiful form, the land of Vrindavan, even the blowing of the wind in Vrindavan. All these different things are inspirations for attraction to Krishna. So similarly, one may be inspired to surrender to a spiritual master who reflects the qualities of Krishna. Not that a spiritual master imitates Krishna. He doesn't make himself the center of the Ras Leela. But he directs the attention of the disciple to Krishna. And he attains the qualities of Krishna as the in the position of being the servant of Krishna. So we see that just like so many devotees were attracted to Srila Prabhupada and are attracted to Srila Prabhupada for his wonderful transcendental qualities. So ultimately one has to make the decision whether or not to surrender to a spiritual master. But if one is at all inclined to be a devotee of Krishna, then he will appreciate the transcendental qualities of a devotee, and those transcendental qualities will inspire him to surrender. Are there any other questions?
Valami más kérdés?
Jai, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada.